passarinha, passarinha. Lá vem, e lodi, lodi, não, venha não, mas é lá, e me, pede, pede, neste esquema, me diga, ani pi, pico, se me riba, custo, se vou dar, na riba. Lá vem, e lodi, lodi, não, venha não, mas é lá, e me, pede, pede, neste esquema, me diga, ani pi, pico, se me riba, teď výšku, nabírá, a vzletá, letí.
The time is 10 p.m. and you've been listening to A Different Nature here at KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. If you would like to know what we've been listening to for the last 2 hours, please go to kboo.fm and look up programs and look up A Different Nature, and we will have that playlist for you. Thanks for listening.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor PDX Pop on Saturday, July 21st and Sunday, July 22nd at Audio Cinema in Portland. PDX Pop celebrates its 15th year with bands like Mr. Wrong, Ritual Veil, Miss Rayon, Nick Normal, Petite, Earl Thomas and the Pain, and many, many more, as well as a street fair, refreshments, and Riggs Kitball. Again, that's PDX Pop on Saturday, July 21st and Sunday, July 22nd at Audio Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to Talking Earth.
You're listening to KBL Portland, 90.7 on the FM dial. Tonight, I have the good fortune to be in the studio with Dan Raphael and Eric Wayne Dickey. For over 3 decades, Dan Raphael has been active in the Northwest as poet, performer, editor, and reading host. The Closer You Get to Nowhere, his 20th book, will be published this winter. Is that correct, Dan, or am I reading something wise?
No, it should be this winter. The guy's a real casual printer. It might be this fall, might be early next year.
But it's going to be published by Last Word Press, which did Everyone in This Movie Gets Paid in June of 2016. Raphael, is that's also wrong or not? No.
Yeah.
Raphael is known for the energy of his performances, of his highly imaginative and driven poetry in places like Bumbershoot, Cascadia Poetry Festival, Powell's Books, Wordstock, Red Sky, Reed College, and Portland Jazz Festival. He is prose editor of Unlikely Stories, and every Wednesday writes and records a news poem for the KBOO Evening News. Eric Wayne Dickey's poems and translations have been published in Rhino.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. West Wind Review and International Poetry Review. He's received a grant from the John Anson Kittredge Fund and is a Vermont Studio Center Fellow. He co-edits Pacifica Poetry International, formerly
Totopos.
So, yeah, let's just get started. Let's correct everything I lied just a minute ago. So, Eric, you're going to have a new copy or a new issue of Pacifica Poetry International come out soon.
Right, that's forthcoming. We're currently working on it. In the past, Pacifica, and like you were saying, formerly it was called Totopos Poetry International, we publish region or country or nation-specific poetry. We have issues on Hungarian poetry, and this our latest issue is on Tunisian poetry. And we're doing something different with this forthcoming issue, and it's going to be on an individual poet who is highly regarded in Algiers and in the Mediterranean. His name is Lounis Ait Mengelet. He's considered by many the Bob Dylan of North Africa, if you will, and his concerts are widely attended. People know his lyrics by heart, and his songs are celebrated. And so it's kind of going to be fun doing something on one poet.
Should be amazing, and perhaps we'll have you on at a later date to talk about that more about that. You were also you showed me your children's book,
right? Yeah,
which I didn't originally believe was yours, so I was a little confused because
well, I like to joke that if you read some of my poetry, you probably wouldn't want your children reading my children's book. But I have two kids, Ava and Alan, and they're now 15 and 12, and after reading children's stories to them over the years, I just kind of got the idea that I could write a children's book, and I got very lucky. It was published by Craigmore Creations, which is out of Portland here, and they did a fantastic job.
Okay, so I'm going to kind of step out of the way and allow, I mean, I could, Dan, you've been on KBOO.
Yeah, once or twice.
Once or twice.
Yeah.
Probably well, no, the last 2 weeks.
We like your input. Right. Well, I am on, as you said, most every Wednesday as part of the KBOO Evening News, where I write a news poem. And that's been a great experience for me. I've been doing that for just over 2 years now at the encouragement of then news director Lisa Loving. And I am not a deliberate poet. I am not William Stafford, who gets up whatever time he did and writes every morning. I can't, you know, write a poem for me. No, I can't. But I've been writing one every Wednesday, sometimes Tuesday night, always tying in some news things, and it's kind of a great adventure. And thanks to KBOO for that, you know.
Well, so I think I'm going to step out of the way and let the two of you share poems.
Okay.
And rotate.
All right. Oh, thanks, Dan.
You're the visitor. The visitor bats first.
I'll start off reading a poem that I call The Kind of Mind I Want. And I was first inspired to write this after reading some poems by Gerald Stern and trying to figure out, you know, what my voice is, who I am as a poet. This was many years ago. The Kind of Mind I Want. I saw a Bigfoot near St. Helens. Long after the eruption, I was hiking down a trail when I saw it, the big hairy man-like thing kneeling over a creek, cupping water with its hands. It saw me and the wild look in my eyes. It scared the shit out of me. I couldn't even breathe. That's the kind of mind I want. A seeing a Bigfoot mind, a staunch skeptic turned suddenly, the clarity and zeal that follows. Before the story gets on the wire, before I am some freak show on Letterman, I want a Bigfoot mind. When the story is still fresh and I am still out of breath, I want you to be the first I tell.
Well, I don't get out in the woods or to St. Helens much. I kind of sit at my desk, which faces a schoolyard, so I do get to see watch people playing with their dogs, waiting for the DNA test. Could I count the black dogs in the field if they stop moving? Or is it just two or three dogs displaying simultaneously all the places they've been and will be there, chasing the ball of the sun, playing tug of war with a hank of river? The crows near the homeless camp know me, breaking open a plastic bag of rain-soaked bagels and pastries so more could eat as more fly in. And what of our oak, tormented by squirrels, strip-searched, gnawed, then expected to provide shelter in a hole or crotch? Who else is living there, not counting the moss machines, the insect processes? But I don't mean bees. More functional and intelligent than we could ever, no matter how we choose to miniaturize, to export natural functions to devices we can never fix, only upgrade. Is there a mammal whose skin no one ever wore? A bird whose feathers didn't decorate some body? The tree my door came from? The ice that became my window? When a dog's tail is wagging, where are his teeth? When I think it's night, but my windows are covered with crows, as flesh is a veil, as clothes announce our sadness at having so little fur and no feathers at all, just these thick bones to withstand small collisions and keep us chained to the earth we seldom rise from, seldom run across full speed, trailing slobber, dust, and fleas of random memory. I drive a mile to the thirsty dog. The bartender asks if I'm a service animal. Or might I be in season?
Well, this next one I'll share then is continuing this
go
theme
ahead,
of science. But
I did want to ask Eric one question. You sure did see a Bigfoot?
I did not see a Bigfoot, but okay. I'm glad you asked.
That's all I wanted to know.
Because this next poem, it's funny that you asked that question, because after I once read this next poem at a venue, and somebody in the audience came and asked me if it really happened. So
I thought everything
convincing in my work.
It all really happened.
Yeah, every poem really happened, isn't it?
And this one, what was the title of that last one again?
Waiting for the DNA test.
Waiting for the DNA test. This one also has science in its title, and it's the Latin name for what is called a walking tree. And if you see the Latin name, it's Socratia exoriza, which looks like Socrates exercising. Socratia exoriza. A group of walking trees attacked a logging camp near Emmett, Idaho. There's been a month-long standoff with local police. The trees have built an impregnable fortress equipped with abatis, catapults, snares, and snags. The mill has long ceased production and is unoccupied by people. But the trees seem to be amassing troops and are a growing threat to the community. The governor is asking local residents to vacate the area and has called for the National Guard to deploy. These trees should be considered armed and dangerous. They can easily infiltrate new communities. One can suddenly appear, knocking against the back wall of your house. Next time you're out, look around. You'll see them, a forest army running across the countryside, charging over hill crests, wielding big sticks. And through their ruffled voices, you can hear them cry out their battle names, their green hair waving in the wind.
It's better than Tolkien's Ents.
Yeah, well, I think that's maybe what Teddy Roosevelt meant, walk softly and carry a big limb. But, you never know. But hey, we got this nature riff going. This poem was inspired. I found this really beautiful book by George Hitchcock up at David Abel's Passages Bookstore up on MLK here. I gave the book away, but I kept this quote. I hear the music of sorcerers trapped in the bowels of herons. Heron sightings are rare for me, occasionally near the river where I seldom go. Music is everywhere, but almost all of it pours directly to single pairs of ears, leaking whispers and fuzzy bass. Actual sorcerers don't show their hands, unlike would-be apprentices thinking smartphones or wands. Yet 10-year-old connections suddenly revealed, multiple identities, threads that spark, a deja vu you can't walk around. My wings camouflage as a plaid shirt, all my willpower keeping me from going through the fish market window. I want a coat that keeps out the cold but lets music flow both ways, undistorted. I want glasses that let me see what's swimming beneath the sidewalk, who's flying barely treetop, invisible against the sky that doesn't bother to dress because so few ever look at it. A bass riff twitches through my fingertips like a perch just close enough to surface.
Wonderful. Okay, I'll continue this nature riff that we're on. This next one was inspired after reading a Dorian Lux poem called The Shipfitter's Wife. I think it's in her book Smoke, which...
What was that word? Shit?
The Shipfitter's Wife. And this one's called The Tree Climber's Husband. Dusk brims over the horizon during her long drive home. When she drops her gear on the porch, spurs and lanyards clang like giant keys. He waits until her boots are off before opening the door. Carefully, they only let lips touch. Her clothes are thick with poison oak oils. He helps her undress, slides her pants from her legs. Her arms spread like branches as he lifts her shirt and reveals her armpits, unshaven after a week in the field, hidden like nests for voles and owls. Her socks still wet from sweat. Her hair smells of fur and fern. She guides him to the floor. Her fingernails, dirty with the forest, dig into his back. She wraps her limbs around the trunk of his body and holds her underbrush aside, guiding him through her lower canopy. Her ankles lock around his calves as she readies for the long drive home and the dusk brimming over.
All this nature, and I understand, Eric, you coming up from Corvallis. I mean, last time I was down there, the parking meters were still like 10 cents for half an hour. I felt I was in Pleasantville, but Eric, you're now in Portland, and here's a pan to my favorite street in Portland. Every city's got one. Used cars, cheap burgers, questionable groceries, frequent police, no one walking casually. More intestine than arterial, more stomach than heart, 80 seconds more retrograde than Mercury, though nothing moves that quickly here. Car lot banners distracting walkers from the obstacle course where a sidewalk should be, from the occasional slowing vehicle who's not asking for directions. 82nd will never be gentrified, never unnecessary. Some things you don't want delivered to your house. Signs say Avenue of Roses, but no flowers. Business districts call this the J District, though so little green here and no gems. 82nd's precious metals are cars, needles, and shopping carts. Portland's most diverse street, also its most American. I live on 78th. 82nd mostly stays on 82nd. Only the sirens there are loud enough to not be drowned out by the interstate half a mile east, hundreds passing every minute with no idea what urban splendor they're avoiding.
Love that ending. I actually walked down 82nd, like, not that, because I was going to a cheap movie, and that's like the Academy is the only place you can go.
I love
now.
The Academy.
Yeah, which is not on 82nd, but it's close.
Yeah.
And it surprised me in that it's like there's the Safeway, and it's not a Safeway anymore. It's a Fauvin or...
It's an Asian grocery, but, you know,
yeah.
Hat Fatter or something.
Yeah, I was just kind of amazed that it was a lot more... There were empty lots in the way you're talking about, but it was a lot better than I thought. Mm. Of course, yeah. I live in Old Town, so...
Yeah. No, I mean, if you love Asian food, I mean, it's a great place to go. There's, you know, tons of stuff, and it's, you know, you still got the used car lots, and you got other things hanging around, but, you know, the bus goes by every 15 minutes, and you're good.
Yeah, the last conversation was paid for by the 82nd of
Business District. 82nd is the one that
which
connects.
There really isn't one.
No, there is.
It connects to the airport.
It used to take it to the airport, but then they got 205 to take care of it.
They didn't want that to keep happening.
You can still get that. Yeah, people fly into Portland, the first thing they see is 82nd. Not good.
Yeah. Sometimes when I leave the airport, I go down 82nd just to, you know, get a flare of the city.
No, I really like it. I walk it. I see no problems with it. It's I used to work on it.
But it is the splendor they're avoiding.
Yeah. I mean, it's it's real. I mean, it used to be the border. I mean, anything past 82nd, and there's still a lot of problems with the city. I mean, we're on KBOO. We can talk politics a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, of all people feeling mistreated, and, you know, like there was a line in that poem. This poem was about three times longer, which had more history in it, and where, like, it used to be the boundary between the waves of immigrants, you know, which side are you on? Uh-huh. But, you know.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah.
How long have you been in Portland, Patrick?
Early 90s.
Mm. You too, Dan?
Late 70s.
Yeah, he's been here longer. Yeah. Yeah, like, you probably remember when Old Town was actually really Chinatown. Well, I guess it kind of was Chinatown when I was moved here too.
Well, when I got here, they were still working on 205.
Yeah.
I moved to Oregon in 91.
About the same time as me, 92.
Never left.
No, I didn't.
All right, I'll read this next one here. This is one of those poems that you write after you get into an argument with your lover, okay? We all do those. Maybe we don't write them down. Maybe we just think we shouldn't write them down. After you left, I stopped exercising and riding my bike. Instead, I drove to work every day. I stopped eating oatmeal, only eggs over easy and buttered toast for breakfast, hamburgers and french fries for lunch, and a strict liquid diet for dinner. I drank lots of coffee and beer, smoked cigarettes and cigars, went to bars and flirted with women, and I admit, the scent of an unfamiliar perfume behind an ear tickled my nose. I didn't do laundry, make the bed, or open the curtains. The dishes stacked up. I didn't recycle, sweep the house, or even take out the garbage. I forgot to feed the dog on occasion. She now looks at me with drooping ears and licks at my feet. The cat hisses at me when I walk by and hasn't been around much. I hardly brushed my teeth or showered, stopped flossing altogether, and stayed up late watching TV and eating chocolate ice cream. I took your advice after you left and really let myself go to hell.
This poem begins with a quote. "The past is never where you left it." Catherine Ann Porter. I had to buy a smaller belt. Couldn't afford a shirt that looks like LeBron James's chest. I started wearing a hat because I was forgetting to duck, because I no longer felt I was the one who had to get out of the way. I can hold my breath in either hand. My palms can expand like parasails, but neither the wind or my arms are strong enough to lift me. When I realized 2020 was more a matter of willpower than optics, when I found the audio equalizer in my brain, not far from the translation module for languages from my past, Polish, Finnish, Indo-European, what will tomorrow do for me? Is it time for booster shots against capitalism and America first? It takes less and less stupidity to trigger allergic reactions. Lowered immunity means a single shot of frustration disrupts my ability to socialize or drive. I want the opposite of a vaccine so I can more easily go viral. Just because the sign says walk doesn't mean that's the way to go. Sometimes walk means be gone. Sometimes the best way to be invisible is keep talking. Sometimes there's no time. Often there's a way too much space and very little room. When the ledge is an inch wide and the cliff is coming towards me like a five-story breaker, murky with tendrils and chunks, the sky's as clear as 1930s Pittsburgh, rain the flavor of double-shift coal miner's sweat. Some days I'll go three shirts to keep a clean collar, to contain my fuming hunger, so I have a chance to sneak up on something.
I like the LeBron James reference. So,
if we were on TV, you could tell. I did get the shirt. So,
because the LeBron James, I'm working on a poem now on LeBron James, and it keeps changing the more he accomplishes things. So, and now that he's moving from Cleveland to who knows where,
Los Angeles. He's moving to the Lakers. Yeah.
So, the poem is in progress. But and the reason I bring this up is because I'm working on a collection of poems called the James Poems. And so I write to people or places named James as if they were my brother. And
whose name is James?
Whose Michael? Name okay. is James. James Dickey, not the writer, but...
The other
James Dickey, right. Yeah. Anyway, he died in his sleep about, it'll be 10 years this October. And I've been just keeping the memory of him alive by writing these poems. And it's been a wonderful project. And I'm going to read one of those, maybe another one for you, too. This first one is James Brown. It was first published. I wanted to give a shout-out to my friend Jerry Bruno, who publishes Togood Poetry. You should check it out online. He does good work. James Brown. Sex appeal, stamina, hair, white teeth, confidence, you had it all. A collared shirt, a sharp belt, crisp denim jeans, but why no shoes in your casket? Only socks. You used to wear black hush puppies until they sloughed off your feet like brittle rags, holes in the soles. Shoes determine who lives, who dies. If only you'd had high-quality, patent leather shoes to wear, you'd still be dancing today. With the right shoes, you could hit the splits from a standstill in an instant on the floor like a death drop, seamless, overtaken by spirit as if God himself placed his finger on your forehead. Yes, that's it. If only you'd had better shoes. Shoes to bind your feet. Shoes to help you slide back up in time to hit the microphone. Get up, get on up. Stay on the scene, get on up. Get up.
I'd like to interject here and say you're listening to Talking Earth. This is KBO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial. And this is Patrick Bocard, and I'm here in the studio with poets Eric Wayne Dickey and Dan Raphael, who were just reciting James Brown lyrics. And I'd also like to give a word of condolence to longtime Talking Earth host Barbara LaMorticella, who her husband Robert unfortunately passed away this past week.
Yeah, yeah, Barbara, you're well known in the KBU community, and we're all sending hearts and blessings out to you. I know you got good family support and a lot of friends, so you're loved here and you're loved all around town, even sometimes in Corvallis.
That's right. Yeah, we published in my Poetry International Journal, we published some of Barbara's work several years ago. So thoughts are with you, Barbara.
Yeah.
My thoughts are with you.
Well, let's get back to James Brown, I guess, though. I mean, I don't know. I've sometimes wanted to call myself the hardest working man in the poetry business, but it's a tough legacy to live up to, and plus all of James's extracurricular activities. I don't even own one gun, but you know.
But, oh, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, I think there's gun charges, wife charges, drug charges.
Oh, okay.
It's only rock and roll, but he likes it. But, if Jimi hadn't died so young. In this world, Jimi Hendrix didn't die at 27, but kept advancing his prowess on the guitar, playing two at once, multiple strings. Like Chaplin, he could do anything he did backwards as well, and sometimes he'd start a song in the middle and go five or six different ways from there, ensphering himself and listeners in a shifting laminae of sound. At a show in Philly, most of the audience blacked out. Several suffered stroke-like symptoms, two disappeared. With a lawsuit filed by a victim, the government seized Jimmy's guitar, the Pentagon volunteering to study the evidence. More guitars were built. More people plugged into Hendrix and played guitars several hours a day. No one knew if Jimmy was in jail, hiding, or if his playing had opened new dimensions in vibratory time. Are we still on the same world we started on? What chords could I make with nine strings and six fingers? Reports of others disappearing while Hendrix played, with the feds suppressing the total. On March 1st, a 10-meter-tall transparent creature emitting guitar-like sounds shattered a 2-kilometer stretch of the Great Wall of China, then vanished in a rancid fog. In paranoid anticipation, guitarists cleared store shelves of strings. The sun rose with ear-splitting feedback, surrendering to an arpeggio of random vertebrae, nerve triggers ranging from St. Vitus to waltz, many unable to drive because their feet wouldn't stay still. Radios were ignored. No earbuds could keep out the panoply of music. Bodies finding new limbs. My feet trading mycorrhizally while my suddenly tendrilled hair embraces the pollen-filled sky. Billions of microscopic notes ready to blossom into life-expanding solos. Some neighborhoods so thick with music, you need neither amplifier or guitar. You and the air collaborating symphonies to take us where we never could be.
Wonderful. I am working on a Jimi Hendrix poem for my brothers for my Book of James collection. But
that's right.
Yeah, that's
right. It's really, yeah.
Yeah. There's so much to include, to figure out what I should include, because I'm keeping a pretty strict format with these. Okay. 12 lines each.
Oh, is it going to be a poem for a gymnasium?
Gymnasium.
Okay. Gym neighbors. There we go.
That's right. That too. Yeah, Jim Neighbors.
Yeah, there's so many I could do. People keep suggesting new Jameses every time. So I'll have to put Jim Neighbors in the queue.
Is Jim Neighbors a James or not? I think Jimmy was, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Never know.
Research is involved.
His real name was probably Alphonse Neighbors, and he just thought Jim was more accessible.
Yeah.
That's one of the wonderful things about this project is that all the research I get to do for writing the poem.
Oh, yeah. You got to watch a bunch of LeBron James videos.
Exactly. Here's one, Captain James Tiberius Kirk. This starts off with a little epigraph by Frank Bidart from his book Metaphysical Dog. The Enterprise is abandoned and not. James, is that you? The electricity went out. It's dark here in space, cold too, freezing. Auxiliary power has yet to come on, but Captain, if that is you bumping your shins on the table, creaking the hallway floorboards on your way to my quarters to swish open my door, to wake me, to take me to witness the meteor shower, I am still your ship's first mate, Spock. I can see the falling stars through my bedroom window, but Captain, if that is you, I will follow you anywhere, to the final frontier. Well, not the final frontier, not yet anyway. I want to finish raising my children and your kids, the products of your many intergalactic trysts. They now look to me at the helm. I still have the calculator we pretended was a tricorder when we flew our Enterprise, the treehouse we set on fire in the little woods where we went to explore a strange new world and seek out new life.
Okay, well, we'll take the theme sideways. This this was inspired a couple years ago. I read this really great science fiction trilogy by M. John Harrison. I think one of the books is called Quantum something or other, but just amazing stuff. And so a couple of phrases here were stolen from.
I've been into reading some science fiction
lately. Yeah, it's
I'm
great,
late to it
it's
in life.
A great trilogy. Like, yeah. Easier to call all of it rain. Tonight's weather pursues us from bar to bar. The black and white cats, never calico, blue marmalade, pour out of the horizon, staying dry in the always rain of cracking shells. Curtains becoming dust when touched, counterweights are forgotten twins. We're all brain fried, stomach pumped, bitter hair with dressing on the side, swimming laps in its monkey dish, every part of the year rife with unexpected triggers. Between one step and the next, night changes to day and back again. A thick fur on everything, reward and IOU, allergies and fingerprints, merging in mazes, contradancing like quilts, with each square a unique compass. Are those clouds falling or mile-long trusses? Keep your mouth shut and breathe from where your fingernails were. Snow comes through the ceiling but never reaches the floor. I thought I knew what escape looked like. Hillsides painted by numbers, thousand-year eggs blossoming ephemeral daffodils, the opposite of caution. Bedsheets turned into sails, the only breaks we have, more mathematics than substance. Dogs in everything. The louder their voices, the more inarticulate they are. Sunlight sloshing in the well of the street, while insects wavering trajectories of brassy light, shadows stuck at absurd angles, as if geography was remembering someone else, walls, ditches, towers absorbed overnight into a huge motionless fairground. Street aglow as if fresh from the Bessemer, adapted neither for stealth or pursuit, so fancying both, hearing the invisible, tomorrow's leftover dishes floating in an abandoned building foundation that's now the city's kitchen sink.
Very cool. So you can't see it here from the radio, but I brought a collection of poems that I wrote called the Hardy Boy Poems.
It's got a rather risque cover.
They are great.
Thanks. It was published by Beard of Bees Press back in February 2013, and you'll get the gist of it. But basically what I did is I took the Hardy Boys language and rewrote them into socially awkward situations.
That's not hard.
A little bit more culturally relevant for our modern times today. But what an interesting history the Hardy Boys as an American fiction is. It was wonderful doing the research on them and even reading some of the old books to kind of get the language right and this need for being updated. I'll just read one from this book. And I'll read two. And this first one is called In the Clutch of the Octopus. And it was published by Teeny Tiny, which is run by Mandy Laftland. I think she's out of Seattle. Anyway, In the Clutch of the Octopus. Joe and Frank were the best friends brothers could be. As Frank and Callie's relationship began to blossom, Joe found himself alone more and more. Iola had gone to summer on Rocky Isle, so Joe thought he should take up an extra hobby. He wasn't quite sure what that would be. A little soul searching was in order. So he set out early one morning on his own to hit some flea markets in the area. That's when he found the brass hookah. He thought it looked like a many-tentacled octopus. Nargila, the Turkish merchant said with a smile as Joe handed him the money. He took it home to polish it up and discovered a hidden chamber inside the pipe containing a small chunk of resin. Thinking it was incense, he held it over a candle flame. He found its sweet scent relaxing. Later that week, Frank noticed that Joe seemed absent and detached. He was sleeping late and was easily agitated in the morning. Something had a hold on him. Yeah, these were fun to write. All right, here's another one. The Axeman of Bayport. Bayport was their fictional town. Summer was in full swing. With Joe and Frank Hardy out of town, Bayport seemed frozen in time. Biff Hooper walked towards Preto's Pizzeria to see if Tony could slide him a slice. He saw Iola and Kaylee cut down the alley, and he decided to circle around and give them a spook. But he was the one who got a surprise. The girls were sharing a smoke with Belinda Conrad's brother, Brian. Biff decided to play it cool and simply walked up to them. "Hey, guys, how's it going?" Without a word, Brian handed Biff a pack of Marlboros, and Biff fumbled one to his lips. Brian flicked his Zippo, and Biff pretended he knew how to smoke. Brian began shaking a can of red spray paint. The plastic ball inside clicked out a jazzy rhythm. Biff choked down a cough. The girls giggled. Just then, police chief colleague rolled up in his patrol car, brakes squealing. Biff froze, his face pale. The girls began whispering. Brian sneered at the chief and, without a flinch, sprayed "Bird Lives" on the blue dumpster.
Oh, great ending. I like that.
Where is Bayport supposed to be?
I don't know if it's located East in Coast? The state. I would think it'd be close to D.C. or something because their father was some kind of international spy.
There's
or something.
A town on Long Island that's called Bayport. Mm. That's why I was.
That's probably it.
Weird.
Or those Hardly Boys.
Long Island.
Hardly Boys.
Long Island, where all bad language starts.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can find that collection online at Beard of Bees Press. It's a fun little, they do all kinds of short chapbooks by lots of different writers. And
yeah. Well, I don't know who was president during the Hardy Boys, but it wasn't anything like what we have now.
It wasn't Nixon?
No, it started in the 20s and 30s and went on through the 50s.
They kept carrying them through.
So in other words, this Calvin Coolidge.
Yeah, probably.
That makes the most sense.
Harding, yeah. Even, right?
Yeah.
The Harding Boys. There we go. Yeah, but this poem was inspired by an incident of our dear leader. Whose hand between my head and the door frame? Bang my head against the, hold my finger to the flame, cry, run, drop and roll, fold into a tree, pray for instant night, for the transporter beam to reach me before the bullet. As once light is through a crack, it widens, diffuses, makes shadows, where I hear the energy, feel the bass so many are holding in, the subsonic pulmonary percussion, skin on skin, wood on wood, bone against metal. Each day's a little hotter. Night has given up on cooling. Wind is waiting for motivation. Time turning sticky swamp, aglow with memories, analgesic Photoshop. Such a complex pizza, no one gets all the same toppings, has the same word for all the same flavor. She says the cop was tall. He says the cop was average. The maniform, the unifold, anonymous knowledge, the edge of what I know, where the past and future show their tattered pixels, cloth unraveling or not yet hemmed. I go to the bathroom, but nothing comes out. I look in the mirror, but it's the same headlines from 3 days ago. This threatened, that blocked, the five stupidest things I just remembered. If I was 20 stories above the ground instead of one, would the actual world be any further? Deforested, platted, paved, cheek to jowl, no room to howl. Here my clothes close me. Do I cover my head or shave it for full exposure? Put a mask on the back of my skull so you think I'm backing away. Does it matter if the policeman can hear, if he knows my language? So much stops when the cop stops you. The Constitution, common sense, my long-crafted reins on paranoia and a sense of justice. Is it better to be mislabeled or not to be seen at all? If I don't drive a car, my taillight can't malfunction, my registration can't expire, and the extra hours I spend taking public transit are time I can't spend on art, joy, or community. Soon police won't pull buses over. They'll just reroute them to where none of us want to go.
We're about there, aren't we?
Yeah, is that really TriMet, or not? Why does the TriMet bus have bars on the window? Okay. How are the Corvallis police, Eric?
Eric, let's get us out of the paranoia that me and Dan enjoy.
Well, I could comment a lot, but I won't. Another time, perhaps. I was hoping that you'd get read some of your more political charge poems, because I know you've been writing a few of them. And you've been inspired a lot by that lately, it seems.
Yeah, okay.
So I got one that I wrote several years ago, and unfortunately the title of this can change. It's now called Two Old Men from Ferguson, but as we move forward in time, this could easily happen in the next city. Neighbor, death is near, and so I've come to apologize for my misgivings. I know it is late, but the silence of stars keeps me from sleep, and our dogma dictates that we share our transgressions in times of death. Neighbor, I am sorry I spoke ill of you in the past. I hope you can find forgiveness in your heart if it has any hope left, for I wore what my father willed me, old uniforms stained with lipstick. Neighbor, I'm sorry I cannot remember why I cursed your name in the dark. The memories of our disagreements are like abandoned pilings of a broken pier marching into shallow water. Neighbor, I am sorry I lie awake at night. My gut retches with fear. I grind my teeth and worry I will not spend my final days in joy. Where is your sun? Where is your water glass? Let me fill it for you. Where is the smell of fresh bread that once wafted through the streets into our homes? Now only sounds of sorrow and distant sirens drift through our windows. Neighbor, I cannot look at you. Tears cut trails through the dust on my face. Flies dance around our lips like whirling dervishes. The air itself is a noose. Where is the laughter we once breathed? My house is full of holes. My feet are cracked and full of glass shards. My dog was shot by police. The fence that once guarded my family is splintered behind my home. Now it is firewood. Shall I warm your house with it? Neighbor, forgive me. Death is near, and I cannot sleep.
Okay. Yeah, as Eric mentioned, I've been doing political poems for the KBOO Evening News on Wednesdays. It usually is right at the top of the show after the headlines. And if you were listening last Wednesday, July 11th, you heard this poem. Trump can't meet the court deadline for returning children to their parents. Who's going to make them? Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court is anti-abortion, pro-business, and wrote that the president can't be convicted of anything. Who's going to stop him? What if the Senate can't get into their building to vote? What if Kavanaugh can't get out of his house to testify? What if all the doors on Trump's D.C. hotel were epoxied shut? There aren't enough police and unemployed mercenaries, enough military bases and empty Walmarts to contain us millions who want a government that follows the will of the majority of the people, not just those few with a majority of the cash. We can't count on enough Democrats on the system. All we have is ourselves. If we don't get out in the streets, the offices, the red barns, the media, and use the only leverage we have, our numbers, might as well hook the internet directly to our brains and worry about food and water later. We've seen that movie before. I'll die before I live there.
Wow, very good.
Well, that's an angry one.
Angry times.
Yes.
Mr. B.
How many of those have you written? How long have you been doing it for the news?
2 years. So
every Wednesday?
Well, I'll skip some occasionally, but skipped the 4th of July because KBU was didn't have news, just had the blues festival. Good substituting blues for the news. I mean, what's the diff?
You must have close to 100 of them.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah.
You're going to collect them together?
Who knows?
Exciting.
You could collect them all together on the website.
Yeah. Well, they're in the computer.
Yeah, I know, but you.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? Oh, you only need to, like, what's a quorum in the Senate?
Oh, now I don't know. It keeps changing.
You just need to, like, prevent, like, a certain amount.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, in fact.
Especially a certain amount of.
Oh, wait a second. I take it back. Quorum's gone because they got rid of the. That's what the. What is it? That's what the filibuster's based on, right?
Yeah, right. I think McConnell did, to stop filibuster.
So they're really, that doesn't make any sense.
There's got to be a rule. I mean, it can't just be one guy.
Is it? Yeah, that's.
It seems to be.
Or could it? I mean,
actually, that'd be interesting. Chuck Schumer's in there and he locked everyone else out. He's like, I vote no. He fails.
Merkley. We'll get Merkley to.
Merkley would probably.
I had the really good fortune recently. I went to a conference in D.C. and I sat right next to Ron Wyden on the airplane. And he was a very pleasant person. And he flies coach and. He was the most popular person on the airplane. Everybody wanted to talk to him, and he easily talked to them all. It was
cool.
Really cool sitting next to him. Yeah, I'll read a politically charged poem. This one. So one of the things that I do is I translate German poetry to English. And my mother's German. I spent a number of years there. And this poet, his name is Hans Arnfrid Astel. He just passed away this last February, I believe, 78. He might have been in his 80s. I can't recall right now. This one's called Bosnian Lullaby. Recklessly, my child, you were born here upon this blood-drunk earth. Alas, your luck is, while you live, forlorn, you must become a soldier first. No one can live here. In order to live, no one can quietly weave a death shirt. Child, a house you will never inherit, for whoever lives here, my child, must perish. So no way out.
That's happy. let's just get abstract.
I was going to say, though, that Bosnia is not in a bad situation now, is it?
No, I don't know. I've been keeping up on the news.
I think
they're
it's not perfect, but I think they're...
Since they got rid of that guy, right?
Well,
and that other guy. But
since they got split up and... Yeah, I don't think there's anything... Yeah.
I need to look at my news sources a little bit.
I'm kind of just guessing. I mean, well,
I haven't seen him in the news lately.
No, that's usually a good thing.
Good thing, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Okay, We're having summer and we're having a drought, so let's do this one.
It's 98 degrees today.
Yeah. Rain at the border. No asphalt to tell me if it rained. No radio. The birds still in bed. Wind workers change shifts so incrementally. The train never has to stop, not encircling the world, but showing ways to peel it. When 1,000 miles of momentum meets a 4,000-foot wall, do you go left, right, or up? Put a little of my skin out on the deck and see what happens. Wind loss, absorption, biomagnetic drift. The ants and flies are still asleep. But this many clouds leave little room for anyone else. Any minute a door could open. A phone that only I can hear could ring. Invitation implied. Chairs must be filled or they lose interest and start talking to trees that don't grow here. Legs get bumpy, remembering bark long gone. As if my bones were wood, not tunnels made from grit the sea swallowed but could never digest. Like the grit wind uses as sandpaper, though neither a pleasant abrasive, keeping the dissenting minority dispersed and busy. Spherical compasses adrift in raindrops, kept in solitary till they don't think of themselves as water anymore. That they're made of something we don't name out of ignorance or fear. It's always been this way. Rain does the work no one else wants to. Some things no one else can, never needing to knock, keep statistics, or show ID. No one asks rain how it got here, but then worry it might never leave.
Good stuff. I'll read another one of these translations. Night Butterfly. I broke the finest grape leaf from the stalk. A butterfly sat on the underside. It scared me. It sat stiff in the cold, shaded by a sun visor. I brought you the leaf in the evening light. Despite wind and step, the butterfly did not stir. That night, as we drove south, it flew inside against the windshield. It warmed up to us. I set it free. From hollow hands, it flew into the night.
That was the same poet, right?
Same poet. Same poet. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That poetry collection, I started translating it in about 2002, and it took me a long time. I don't know if you've ever translated, but it's a wonderful education. It's probably the best education I've ever given myself, and because I had to learn German forms of poetry and meter and all this, and the history that comes with it. With each verse, and it took me about 10 years to, and I've sent it out more than I've sent any other manuscript out, and as a result, it's been rejected more than any other manuscript that I've ever sent. So, it's not easy work translating.
Yeah. Well, this might be as close as I get to a formal poem. The form being used here is called the joke. A wolf walks into a McDonald's. A wolf walks into a McDonald's. No one moves. A black Camaro spilling fries peels out of the parking lot. The chase begins. A wolf walks into a McDonald's. The 4'10" cashier bolts for the back door. Wolf leaps the counter in two strides. His jaws tear off her left thigh. A wolf walks into a McDonald's. Nobody says anything, assuming he's a service dog. A wolf walks into a McDonald's. The rent-a-cop, having a late lunch, pulls his weapon and tells the wolf to freeze. The wolf jumps the counter, then out the drive-up window, his teeth grabbing the bag from the convertible driver's lap, 2 quarter-pounders, 2 large fries. A wolf walks into a McDonald's, steps to the counter, and sets down a baggie, in which is an order, 20 double cheeseburgers, no buns, no mustard, and a McDonald's gift card. Your order, 319, the cashier says. The wolf goes to wait with the other customers. No one tries to pet him.
This is KBO Portland. You're listening to Talking Earth, and that was the voice of Dan Raphael describing what happens when a wolf walks into McDonald's.
It's and specifically the one at 82nd, just south of Foster.
And You've also been listening to Eric Wayne Dickey, and perhaps he's going to read another translation right now.
Yeah, I could read another translation. I did bring one more. This book is, the title of it is called A Butterfly Study. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's been rejected. I might as well call it a unicorn study. There's nobody who's going to pick it up, I think.
Well, was that the original name of the collection?
Yeah. So this next one also, it's called Unexpected Company. A butterfly slumbers in winter at my loft apartment door, right on the keyhole. Are you it, key child? Will you come to me? I don't want to stir your sleepy winter. You would flutter to death upon the glass of the window pane. So, soul butterfly, I let you sit by the door where you are near me while I am inside. The book documents the poet. He lost his son to suicide. His son committed suicide at the age of 45. And the book is about him coming to terms and accepting his loss. And he uses butterfly as a metaphor to come closer to that realization. And it's a really remarkable story. I can't talk enough about it because it'll get rejected again.
So we have about time for maybe one apiece.
Okay.
We had about like three more minutes.
All right. Yeah. To make Here's it. A poem that'll be in the new book, The Closer You Get to Nowhere. I spent 6 weeks in two separate spaces at the artist residency Playa on Summer Lake. And all the poems in the new book were written during those 6 weeks.
Wonderful.
Third morning. I missed the moonrise because I didn't know where to look. The mercury in my eyes, not a skeptical compass, but a belief in square that works better in the city. If I only had to swim back once, if I took a long time in circling, when I look in the mirror and see someone else, it's time to either wake up or accept this unfamiliar collar, shoes bouncier, a five-legged cat doesn't make me sneeze. Here the GPS uses the Cyrillic alphabet. That's not a decimal point, but a poppy seed. I draw arrows in the carpet, but next day they're circles. Run through my open door and interrupt foreplay. I could follow my nose, but coffee is everywhere. Leave room for milk? I don't know. Am I gluten-free, lactose intolerant, only eating three colors a day depending on the stars? When Mercury goes retrograde, I binge and purge. For the full moon, I fast. The morning's ice melts in total denial. No clocks, no calendar. My pulse is thready and speaking in several voices. Why do I have to duck for every door? Some windows won't open. All three along this wall are aquaria, one with tiny water-breathing mice of many shiny colors. When the second sun rises, approaching chartreuse, I admire the thick sienna fur on the back of my hands. My dreams were crowded with recipes. Breakfast is about to land.
That's a great place, Playa.
Yeah.
I've not stayed there, not had a residency there, but I drove by it once and I was really impressed.
Yeah, it truly is the closest you can get to nowhere, which is
on Paisley, Oregon, right?
Yeah.
So got time about a minute and a half.
Maybe. Great. I'll finish with another James poem.
Okay.
This one will probably be familiar to many of us who've played Monopoly in our lives.
St. James Place.
Yes. Begins with an epigraph, this one by Bernie Madoff, and I just love it, this epigraph here. Most people lose money because of the emotional difficulty involved. Listed at $160, rent at $14, it sits between Pennsylvania Railroad and a community chest. It feels uptown, but its yellow-orange glows a false hope for the working poor who play out of necessity but don't earn shit back. Statistically, St. James Place is the space where you're most likely to land. Unless I owned it, you passed over it every time. I bought it to spite you. With it, I owned your name. I would put all my money on it just to keep you. Even though we can't play now, you'd still beat me. I would give up houses, hotels, mortgage, all utilities, sell all the railroads to stay afloat. You'd just go to jail, skip over me, maybe hit the free parking, win all the money in the middle, my money. I'd give anything just to flip the board over, watch the pieces scatter, the cards fly, the money drift like confetti, your little silver shoe tumble under the couch where later it would get vacuumed up.
I'd like to thank our guests tonight, Eric Wayne Dickey and Dan Raphael. It's been a fun show. You've been listening to Talking Earth on this is KBL Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial, and please stay tuned for the next show.
KBU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Pass the Mic on Friday, July 20th from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Franklin High School in Portland. Pass the Mic aims to decrease isolation and find ways to connect youth, to carve out their own expressive safe space, and to share it in their own creative terms. This five-day music camp culminates in a closing concert by the immigrant and refugee youth campers, featuring their bands and performances created during the week. Again, that's Pass the Mic on Friday, July 20th from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Franklin High School, 5405 Southeast Woodward Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
While in Atlanta, Danny Lyon joined the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and acted as staff photographer from 1962 to 1964. His first solo photography book, The Bike Riders, A Study of Outlaw Motorcyclists, was published in 1968. Following his publication of The Bike Riders, Lyon completed documentary work on the Texas prison system. Lyon's work is very personal and gives us, the viewer, access to people and places we wouldn't normally get to see.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Danny Lyon film screening on Wednesday, July 18th at 7:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. Danny Lyon will be in Portland to show the films Willie and Murderers. Again, that's the Danny Lyon film screening on Wednesday, July 18th at 7:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.